Last week, in our lining out of our subjects, we did talk about access. We did talk about the structure of the healthcare system. And this originally was scheduled to be a presentation about the quality of healthcare. And as we, who have done some teaching during our lifetime, regularly do, and I'm sure that applies to you folks too, we began to read the crowd, read those who were attending, hearing what they wanted to talk about. And so we put a little twist on this session when it came to just doing a strictly quality assurance and what's happening in the healthcare industry about that matter. And we started, and that was because, as I say, as we talked to people or they talked to us after the sessions, it seemed that that was the right way to go. It would be, I felt, Leah shared that feeling that we would be remiss if we didn't repeat the session, only because this is integral to the whole 2 weeks of teaching that we did. And come on in if you like. We're talking about quality care and of health care. And okay. And we've included this again. And I started last week, and I think it's a good place to start again today, tonight, by talking about the fact that last week we had some illness in the village. And we have some illness right now that we don't really necessarily want to talk about very much, because we have one of our people who is ill, and sometimes people, other people who hear about that get spooked by that. The point of discussing it was that we had enough, and it was in our own family. My wife was ill when we got here, and she got stomach flu. And there were other people who had stomach flu. And I began the session last week by talking to people and asking them, throwing out the question, why aren't people always healthy? And it was interesting to get that reaction. You want to react to them? Why aren't people always healthy? And kind of your answers indicate what we think about health. Want to say something about that? Why aren't people always healthy?
Sometimes it's not taking care of yourself.
Yeah. I was looking more into, we had the standard questions that, or standard answers rather, that people talk in this biomedical age in which we live. People wanted to get into germ theories, you know. Mm-hmm. People wanted to get into, and then we got personal in a social way and said there was disease transmittal from one person to another as soon as we associate with one another, those kinds of things. And I guess where I wanted to go with that, and fortunately we had some theologians in the crowd, not real ones, but believing people. They said, all the way from because we're not perfect, or the classical English language, Christian terminology, and said because we're sinners. We get ill because we're sinners. If you don't like that, because we're imperfect. And that then led us to the question about a whole theological approach to this issue. And that's why I said in some of the publicity about the series or about this particular session that developing a theology of healthcare. Because I think without a theology of healthcare, without a theological understanding of healthcare, probably better said, without a theological understanding of healthcare, maybe some of the things that we're doing don't in turn lead to the issue of that we wanted to address, and that is good or quality health care. I'll show you how I developed that theme and what I meant by that. If you've been reading the newspapers that accumulate over there, and particularly the latest one that came, well, I don't know, maybe by now, maybe one from 2 days ago was there, but I think it's in the July 22nd Seattle paper, whatever the name. Are any of you from Times? Seattle Times, is that right? What is the lady that ran for governor last time? Do you know? This isn't a test, but poli-sci test or anything. We could just ask you. You know what the lady's name is?
I can't remember.
Well, Washington, the state of Washington, had a gubernatorial candidate who was a woman and who lost. And she's all over the newspaper. And yes, I did bring with me, because I can't stand not knowing the news. I brought a radio that works up here, and because I listen to the news, and the Seattle All News Station at 7, there's one at 7:10 and one at 7:77 or whatever it is anyway. And their headlines all were about this. And then it comes out in the paper. And she said, did this lady, that God gave her cancer.
The woman who was running for office?
Yep, she lost. And she said, well, that was okay because God gave her cancer to now give her something to work on and to keep her humble. And
whoa, she didn't get office.
That's precisely why she didn't.
That's probably right. Maybe God gave her a failure so that we wouldn't have in office somebody with that kind of philosophy. But I say, before I was a hospital administrator, I was a parish pastor for 16 years. And I say, how many times did I almost have to argue with people when I would attend to a loved one in the hospital and I would hear things like, it's God's will that my son fell out of the apple tree and broke his arm because, if they said even because, they would say, well, because this will make him understand to be afraid of heights, you know. Oh my gosh, I would go and minister to those people and I would hurt so badly. And the ones that really were bad were that, my last parish was in Janesville, Wisconsin. And there was the nicest guy, and he was on the church council there. And he worked at Janesville's main business is, there's a GM assembly plant in Janesville, and they make trucks and medium-sized cars there. And he came out of the farm community, as so many of those people did, came to work in the factory, a hard-working guy, and he was working his way up, and he had these three really nice boys, and a wife, and three little boys. And I got a call at about 3 or 4 in the morning one time, and they said that he had died. He slept away in his sleep, you know. And so I went over there immediately, of course, and relatives had gathered and so forth, and there was one particularly vocal relative who was trying to be a big help. But her constant spouting to her sister or whatever relative she was, cousin or whatever it was, the wife of the guy who died was, well, you just don't understand God's will sometimes. You just don't understand God's will that your husband has passed on. But believe me, it will become clear, she said, sooner or later. This is God's will. Now, she said, as evidence of the fact that she also thought illness was God's will, didn't Harry, or whatever his name is, slips me right now, didn't he have some heart condition that God afflicted with him with also prior to this time? Oh my gosh, I want to take that lady bodily and throw her out of the house, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and she's spouting all of this crazy. The only problem is that shall we say, one of our major denominations in the United States. Frequently, if you will attend the funeral, a mass of the angels, when a little child dies, that is an ongoing theme of Roman Catholic funerals for children. And the mass of the angels is all centered around the fact that God needed another angel in the sky, and so he took my three-year-old child to him. Oh my gosh, I mean, can you handle that? I can't handle that. And the reason I asked people at that last session was to ask them whether anybody held to that kind of theory of life and health and wholeness and death and all, because it's necessary to get our theology of healthcare straight, or we can't talk about long-range things, or we can't talk about quality in healthcare, because then, if it's just God's will, then we might as well forget the whole darn thing and say, if you die at 3, or if you die at 18, or you die at 88, or whatever, well, it's God's will, and a sort of a fatalism. I interpret that as being a fatalism. I don't think that there's anything about that that is grounded in Scripture. And so as a result, I think that we have to understand that that's not where I'm coming from and not where this presentation is going to come from. And if people don't understand that, then they're going to clash. And I said last time, and I'll say this time, as I'm going to say to John, have you got any exceptions to that, or you want to talk about that?
Well, I was just going to point out, I didn't mean to interrupt your thought, but
that's all right.
Another sort of side to this is even people who are cured of things. You know, some people, like for instance with leukemia, will pray and they'll turn to God and turn to their faith, and then later they are miraculously cured or something, and then they immediately turn around and say, well, see, it's because I'm a Christian person and I prayed to God and God cured me. I think, well, then what about all the people who
God
died
didn't cure
from that and prayed, who prayed and prayed and prayed and are Christians and they died? You know, does that mean that God looked down and said, this person deserves to live, but I will kill these people? And, you know, so it is a really kind of strange thing, because you want to hold on to your faith and think that your prayer helped your outcome, but then you think, well, does that mean that God's ignoring everybody else's prayers? That, you know,
John isn't a plant, by the way, even though he's my son-in-law. John's not a plant, because what he said is going to lead us into the next thing, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, there's a lot of theory now about spontaneous healing, trying to make yourself well, your mental thoughts, your mm-hmm. spiritual thoughts are supposed to nourish you mm-hmm. and help you. So how does that...
I really do believe that too, and yet somehow to think that there's a God in heaven saying, you know, yes, I will respond to your spiritual thoughts, but no, I won't respond to yours. I think it's maybe a little more, I don't know what it is, but things like positive energy and positive thought and all of that that does, it seems to be real on some level, but it is hard to boil it down to God deciding yes for you, no for
you. But we're going to explore that whole thing out a little bit, and this is really good lead into. I didn't have that kind of the benefit of that kind of lead in last week to this, and I had to manufacture things, and one of the things I talked about, and that's not manufactured, and that is that as we try to define what it is that we want to achieve by way of our good health, and when we, why don't we have that good health, what if some people think about health, life and death, those sorts of things. And this was all prelude to getting to some definitions and some outcomes, and how do we get to those kinds of things. I knew we had needed one more chair for this lady that was coming in here. And so these were all prelates. I told the group last week that one of the interesting things is that we have another daughter who's in the healthcare field. Our daughter Karen, Leah's older sister, next oldest sister. We have another daughter who's also preparing to go into well, not, sort of tangentially healthcare. She's going back to graduate school to get her degree in counseling. And but the daughter that I referred to is our daughter Karen, and she's a nurse, and she also has her MBA. So she is a she owns her with another fellow. She owns her own consulting company, and they go about the nation and they do consulting. And one of the contracts that she was telling me about that they had, one of the first contracts that they had, was with the post office, and their effort was to try to teach postal workers to be healthy. Because one of the things that you and I don't know much about probably is the fact that the post office has its largest surge of mail at the beginning of the week because it's accumulated over the weekend, or people dumping Friday's mail in the mailbox, and it just gets dumped into the post office on Saturday, and then Monday is really the big day. And that's true in our suburb as it may be in yours. The problem is that postal workers, somewhat representative, more or less, I have no indices of measurement to say this, so we'll just say more or less representative of our citizenry, uses the weekend to unwind. And as a result, whether we're talking about automobiles, the manufacturer don't never buy a car that was made on Monday, mm-hmm. or never try to get a lot of mail out on Monday. Monday's not a good day because there are hangovers and so forth. Well, my my daughter's contract was to try to develop a concept of health and what it meant to be healthy amongst people, modern day Americans, who did not have that concept, and that said to abuse your body or to abuse your spirit, soul, whatever, and not be ready to go to work on Monday was not the kind of lifestyle that you wanted to live. Which in turn says, I guess, in spite of the fact that some of Americans, and there isn't a nation that is more health conscious than America, Western nations in general, but America particularly, else why do people come from all over the world to be cared for here in America? Our system may not be what they like, or the payment mechanisms, we've discussed all this, we have populations that aren't getting the health care that they want, all of, but the fact of the matter is we have some pretty spectacular health care in the United States, if you know how to access it and you can pay for it, so forth and so on. Anyway, so it's been a surprise to me since I got into the health care field how a certain amount of population continues not to be, even in this modern day age, very concerned or very knowledgeable about their health. We call that episodic. That instead of having a holistic approach and say, I always want to think about being preventative health, and I always want to think about maintaining my health, and I want to do those things that when I do become ill are going to make me well again, a certain large percentage of the population either doesn't have the time, the concept, the understanding to do much about their health. And I said before, again, we attack the issue of quality of care, we ought to know something about or think something about what health really is. And I said, the old time, there's an organization called the World Health Organization, WHO it's called. And most of the nations of the world belong to the World Health Organization. And if there's some great big famine, some great big plague in the heart of India or someplace like that, the World Health Organization tries to help the local government respond to what's going on there. Well, the World Health Organization started out 30, 40 years ago defining healthcare is just the defining wellness as the absence of disease, a negative backdoor type of definition. They have now gone beyond that, and they have now said that to be healthy is not just the absence of disease. They've contradicted themselves completely because they couldn't agree on what the real definition was, and they have now come up with a definition that involves a holistic approach and they want to talk about social conditions, and they want to talk about all of those kinds of things. And
don't you agree, though, that the medical profession is negligent because of their approach to health?
Well, and that's what we're going to, that's what we want to be concerned about, and that is we have to start with, I hope this does what I think it's going to do. I hope this turns over. Nope, it turns over this way. Nope, I guess I got to unscrew those things. Whoa! Not going to be that way, huh? We got to unscrew these things. We tried to figure out how to do this since we've been here, and the kids have written on this with.
And we want to, and I make no apologies because, first of all, I don't have time to be really academic about this.
Some might say, well, because you're a clergyman, you're doing it. I don't think that because I'm a clergyman, I think I'm doing this because I'm a Christian. And I think that if that's what Holden is all about, telling people what the impact of our Christian faith should be on certain aspects of our life, it seems to me that as we define health and as we talk about the quality of health and we talk about these kinds of things, that we ought to start off with ourselves and that we ought to understand what our theology of health care ought to be, what is in harmony with scriptures, what is basic to our beliefs, so that we come out with a healthy end over here, okay, a healthy mind. And I pointed out last week, and I point out again to you folks this week, that unfortunately the dynamics of society and of civilizations, various philosophies impact on people's thought patterns. And when the Christianity was new and in its budding stage, there were all kinds of dynamics at work in the world, and of course, we believe that we stand in the Judeo-Christian. I believe a lot of things because I wasn't writing at the board of Judeo-Christian heritage. But let's be aware of the fact that the dominant philosophy in the world at that time, in the civilized world, not in China or not in India, that was prevalent was Greek thinking. That the Greeks were the thinkers when Christianity budded in the world, and as a result of that, the thoughts of Plato were very prevalent among those who were thinkers and theologians and philosophers. And Gnosticism, which borrowed heavily from the Greek thinking, said that human beings were really two, that is, they pointed out that there was body and a soul or a spirit. And that kind of thinking made its way into Christian theology. And the Gnostics held sway for a number of years, to 100 to about 300-400 AD. And there was constant battles going on amongst those who belonged to this new Christian religion based on its Hebrew past that said, we're going to reject the Gnostics and say that they're wrong because there were certain things incumbent in their philosophy that Christians said is not according to our thinking. And this is probably one of the most prevalent things. And that was that the body wasn't important. That the body really wasn't important. Oh, gee, are we hearing some Gnosticism today about those examples we just gave about people dying, whether they're 2 or 18 or 20 or whatever they are, you know? That the body really wasn't important, that all our efforts in human life should be to, so to speak, tune the spirit, tune the soul. And that when one died, that the body just decayed, and that was the end of it, and we ought not to be concerned about the body. Well, of course, Christianity rejected that because both from its long Hebrew tradition and because of Christ's teachings, we said, yes, one of the statements
when the creeds were formed was, we believe in the resurrection of the body. Uh-oh. Anti-Gnosticism. How did that clause get in the creed? Anti-Gnosticism. And it said that we have a resurrected body. It's a new body. We're not saying that. We got the old broken down. I hope not. I took so many things wrong with my body. I don't want this body and the new life, you know, and the life beyond the grave. Well, okay. The point about this all is that, and then along came some people who thought they were smarter than the Gnostics, and they wanted to divide us up into three parts, and they wanted to divide body, mind, and spirit. And trichotomous, those are called. This is dichotomy, and this is trichotomy. Okay? And so they said, well, we got to reject these things. We got to see the whole person. So if you think the holistic approach to healthcare is new, you say, oh no, guess what? It's founded in my religion. So this guy that's talking about having a theology of healthcare isn't so strange at all. Where did we get the idea of whole? Do you have to be a Christian to have a holistic philosophy of life? No, of course you don't. We included it in our statement over here, because indeed, holistic approach to healthcare is the one that people are beginning now to realize. And this addresses your question about the doctors, and simply saying in our biomedical age that all I'm going to treat is the body. Well, I made a little thing here. I made a little chart here. I think it's going to be about this. Oh boy. Okay. One of the things that happens in our biomedical age, if we think somehow or other we can, and for analysis purpose, of course it's all right to talk about body and mind, or body, mind, and spirit, and so forth. The heresy comes when we somehow or other think that one or the other is not as important, that they're not working in concert with each other. And so for analysis and purposes, sure, we can talk about them, but if we lose the concept that we are a whole person, somehow or other, we've defeated not only our Christian religion, but we've also defeated our goal of having a healthy outlook on our life. I just put this here because this is a typical biomedical analysis. They do HRQLs is one of the things that when you're in the healthcare analysis field that you always want to talk about. Healthcare sociologists, healthcare psychologists, healthcare people need models in order to talk about life. So here's a model that I found in one of our textbooks, and I said, well, what would they look at? What would healthcare people, analyzers, and I thought I'd put it up here, it's as extensive as it is, because you notice that there isn't anything about spiritual in here, about our environment. And they talk about what this is meant to say is that the environment contributes to this, and as you go around the circle here, of course, it affects. And obviously, because this is a secular presentation, how would they ever say something because they would offend somebody? And after all, this study was government. I'd like to add duration of our earthly life here. If we're whole people and we believe in a life hereafter, a Christian approach to the same kind of thing would be to include those kinds of things. And instead of just talking about improvement, maintenance, decline, or variable, I'd like to talk about wholeness. I don't want to attach too much importance to this. It's just that it's interesting to read in analyses of what's going on healthcare-wise, that we don't see a holistic approach made when people, and this is just a tip or a sort of frequently seen type of analysis of people, and I just wanted just to see that they're lacking in that was the absence of a reference to the spiritual and to wholeness, those kinds of things.
I don't understand that middle one. What are the arrows?
Well, they're trying to. I knew I didn't really want to get into this. I was just showing you that this was an HRQL. This is one kind of an HRQL, and it was just showing you that you go through various stages or in analysis that a person does as to where they stand on this, and this may lead to this, and this may lead to this, or it could go up this way and has an effect on the duration of life and all those kinds of things. I really don't want to get into the explanation of the chart. I questioned as to whether I should have even put it up there. But the point about that I was trying to make by doing this is that though there is an awakening in the last 15, 20 years to the whole person, the fact that we must deal with the whole person, in our biomedical age, they're still doing the dichotomy, trichotomy, or at least absenting from their studies the spiritual dimension. And you don't, whether you're a trichotomist or dichotomist, doesn't make any difference, but we do recognize integral to our nature is the spiritual dimension of our life. And somehow or other, well, I know that University of Minnesota, where Lee and I got our graduate degrees, or at least our master's degrees, Lee's doctorate will be from UCLA, but long ago, in what I thought was one of the really forward-looking steps, the family practice division of the University of Minnesota's medical school brought aboard as an employed person lecturer a chaplain. And that said something very powerful, and that said there is a spiritual dimension that somehow or other, whatever be our students' religious persuasion, that they have to be sensitized to as family practice residents, which are the gatekeepers, I hope we all know these days. Family practice or internal medicine are the gatekeepers of the healthcare system. That is, most HMOs or PPOs or private practice people, you don't get to see a specialist unless you know how to work the system, but rather you see a primary care physician who is either family practice or internal medicine specialty. There aren't, I suppose you know, everybody knows, there aren't any GPs anymore. Everybody is either, is one specialty, or everybody's boarded these days. Yes?
Well, but there's people out there, there's Bernie Siegel, there's Andrew Weil, there's Deepak Chopra. Those people are all addressing this issue.
Yes, and as I say, and so is, for instance, and one of the benefits of the contribution from our participants in this class is that one of the people told me of a book that I had not read, was not totally familiar with, I guess I knew about, but the library had it. And on the whole subject of what is God's will, there's a guy by the name of Weatherhead, an English preacher by the name of Weatherhead. And he's back a little ways, maybe 30, 40 years ago, but they have a little pamphlet book here in the library. And I think it's just wonderful that Holden has gone to that extent, and they have Leslie Weatherhead's God's Will book. And it's out of print now, and so you can't go home and get it. And if you're going to be here any time you read it, you ought to check it out of the library and read about what he has to say about God's will. But which also brings me now to your contribution, and that is that, yes, oh, there's all kinds of people that are now, and I say comparatively recently, thinking about the wholeness of being and ministering to the whole person. What I guess I'm trying to sensitize attendees to is the fact that you may still come upon those physicians, those individuals in the healthcare world who have not reached that point yet, and have not reached that point, still might be saying, maybe saying strange things, like this death thing that I told you about. But also, all right, so it's not a matter of life and death, but maybe the camp registrar has an illness right now because it's God's will that she have that, you know? Or they may be so lacking in knowledge about wholeness and the modern the strides that modern medicine has made in the area of conceptualizing what we ought to do for people, that when you talk to them about, well, maybe this person didn't have a germ
oh my gosh, everything is germs, isn't it? Or you say something about social injustices, maybe this person is ill because they live in a setting where they have difficult access to health care. Something has gone wrong with their body that most of us would run off and get some help for, and they can't do that. They haven't got access. So, no, we can't put under a microscope a specific germ, but they may be ill nevertheless, genuinely ill. Well, we used to dismiss this and say, well, that's just a psychosomatic illness, you know. And all of a sudden we say, wait a minute, that's not a psychosomatic illness at all. That's a real illness. Their body and their spirit, or their mind and their spirit are not well, and therefore their body is not well. Sometimes people wonder why, as Christians, we ought to promote, under our theology of healthcare, the government that we support and its attempt, when it attempts to right economic injustices and social injustices, and why that would fall under the banner of healthcare. But if we have a holistic approach, we know why. Now, last night we discussed ethics, and we said, well, is it right that we get into some of these things, or we don't get into some of these things, and how far we should get into those things and all. I'm not concerned with that. That was last night. I'm concerned, and this presentation probably should have come before last night's. What I'm striving for us to do as Christian people is to make sure that we understand the base that we're operating from, and that we need to understand and have a theology of healthcare, so that when we develop an ethics, a system of ethics, Christian ethics, and it applies to healthcare, we know why we're doing that. If we believe that human beings are whole people, then we can say, yes, we think it's not ethically correct by our standards, by the values that we've set, that some of these people be deprived of an access to healthcare when all the rest of us are going on our merry ways, and this is very simplistic, of course, and having good health care. Now, as I say, you have to think that one thing through a little bit, because you understand in the time that's given me here, each one of those sentences needs to be explored and discussed and all. But I hope you're catching the concept that one of my strengths, if I had one in the health care field, was that not only is episodic care sort of silly, but you know the old, am I spelling that right? One needs to strategize, one needs to plan, one needs to finance, and one needs to do it. I'll say that, carry it out, but I sometimes say do it, okay? You know, and unfortunately, episodic care is found down here. Well, just do it. Well, don't be mystified if you have something really go wrong with you. If indeed you've been abusing your body, I'm going to say, and I'm sorry if I offend any of you about this, but I used to be a smoker, and I really smoked. And then, and I'll say to all the people for whom those butt cans are around here, you know, we're just awakening to just doing it is not correct. Because as you work it back up here, if you're going to plan your life at all, if you're going to strategize about what kind of a person you want and how well you want to be, all of those kinds of things, if you're going to work for the wherewithal of life, that lets you be the kind of person and have the kind of things you want to do and do the kind of things you want to do, and you need a little strategy. And one of the things is that says, you can't smoke. You can't smoke. It doesn't go along with good health. It's just not, it's not a moral judgment. It's nothing. You can't smoke. So, and I was one of those people. And so, as much as within us lies to control our own destiny, as I say, we need this holistic
plan, we're smart about ourselves, and then not only do we talk about ourselves as individuals, not only do we talk ourselves, in the case of Christians, as congregation, but we also say the communities that we live in, we need a health plan. And one of the things that has happened in the United States is that we haven't been able to develop a health plan. We don't have an overall health system. We have systems within systems. Leah talked about the Indian healthcare system a couple of nights ago, I guess. And the fact that it was conceived very well, but that it's not working quite the way it should be working. And we know that one of the things that President Clinton did when he came into office, he said, I mean, it's not too hard to see this, that we don't have a system based on whatever values, whatever concepts you have, whether it be Judeo-Christian values or whether it be Muslim, I don't know, or humanistic philosophy or whatever you want. But we said we have to have a system. So he appointed his wife, and I think that without any fear of taking a political stand or any polarity on this thing, it didn't work. It didn't work. It got politicized. And the right people weren't invited. Some people said the wrong people were invited. Blah, 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 blah. And finally it came out and I said, well, it doesn't work. So we're still doing piecemeal things. We say, how's Medicare working right now? It's not a healthcare system. It's a payment mechanism. You know, well, there's tangential things because it pays for what the plan calls for, but it's not a part of an overall strategy for the United States.
With other countries?
Sure. Leah did this in highly socialized countries with a more socialistic government than we have, where they believe that, for instance, in Sweden and other places like that, that it's okay to design an overall system and tax everybody, and that we'll fit you through a system, and we don't have to go as far as Sweden, we can go right across the border up to Canada, and say, well, we think health care for our populace is important enough that if we can pass laws for immigration and for taxes tariffs and things like that, we can also pass a health care law. So they have a health care system. Now, it's not my purpose here at night, because we don't have the time, it's not my purpose to make a comparison or to take apart the Canadian system or to take apart the Swedish system or any of those other systems. It is to say, in response to your question, that there are countries where they have said this is high enough of a priority on our national list of priorities that we think that we should have a system, and so we'll develop one. And of course, everybody wants to run to Canada and say, oh, they look at the wonderful model that they have. And then as soon as you hear that, then this person over here says, but look at the long lines you have to wait for when you go there, blah, 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 and so forth. So they have a system, but the question is whether it works. The important thing is that somebody got enough political clout and they said, let's have a healthcare system. Now, should we have it? That's one back even in the strategy department. There are some people who said we don't need a healthcare system. My concern, and I think going back to last night's Christian ethic presentation, my concern, and I would hope it would be a concern of all Christians, is as we look across this beloved broad land of ours, a country like no other one blessed by God in relative current historic time, the interesting thing is that we have whole populations, or whole genders, or whole classifications, whole economic stratas where there isn't equity of receiving health care. And so I think we could say, without too much fear, though I will acknowledge that someone's standing over here and telling me that we don't need a system, we got as much of a system as we need right now. But I think we're coming to the point that, and unfortunately I think it's going to be economically driven, I think we're going to say finally that the percentage of healthcare expenditures in the United States mandates that we have some kind of single payer or some kind of national HMO or something or other of a system. I wish that we're driven by people such as us who would rise up and say, maybe we can do more by way of, that's in keeping with our theology of healthcare, and more in keeping with our Christian ethical posture with regard to equity, with regard to equity of access, and the whole list of other equities that we want to be concerned about. So, yes, there are other people that have this. Well, back to the issue, and John raised it. I don't want to leave John's question, because I also taught a session on healing. One of the sessions we had was that what do Christians feel about healing? And not in direct response to John's question, but triggered by that, and he'll apply this however he wants to his question. The issue, one of the interesting issues that we pointed out in that session was that the Christian religion since Reformation time has put such an emphasis, due to the Reformers' doctrinal position, that forgiveness of sin was the primary concern of a Christian's relationship to God, that we have set aside the certain other primary examples of our Lord and teachings of our Lord for the sake of that doctrine. And one of those teachings is that God does heal people. And I pointed out that unfortunately some of our religions have made such a thing about healing and made that the whole, they've gone swung the other way and made healing, well, you've seen him, I've asked what that guy's last name was, Benny Hine or Benny, whatever his name is, if you ever watched late night TV, get up at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, and the religious TV stations rerun all of the tapes of things that nobody really ever wanted to see, and to fill up the hours. And Benny Hines has these healing, as have other Elmer Gantry type people down through the ages. And they're kind of sorrows, because we really believe in healing. And we really have to say, kind of in answer to John's question, why some people get healed as a result of prayer and their devout religious perspective, whether they have put the whole mind and body and spirit together, and as a result, that gets them in tune with God's desire to reach down and heal us, or whatever. I guess it's one of the questions we're going to have to ask when we get to the gate. I've got a whole bunch, I don't know if you're keeping a list, but I'm keeping a list, and I got a whole bunch of questions as to, as a pastor, I went into the hospital room and I prayed for those people's healing, but I always said, according to your will, because I don't know God's will. But if you read Leslie Weatherhead's book, you understand some of these things, that it is God's will that all of his good creation, his human beings, be well. And so someplace between his desire to have us well, our sinfulness, where we started out this whole session today, and therefore that allowing illnesses to get to us and social injustices to happen amongst us in the society in which we live and all of the ills that they bring to us, someplace between the life that we do live and asking God for his help in correcting some of those things or those things that happen to us. But it still is a mystery, because a devout Christian doctor will say, I've done everything I can for this person. And pretty soon that person does recover and is well again. And the doctor will tell you, I don't know how that happened. At the same time, the person in the next bed that the same doctor operated on, and if they put everybody on the urological ward, you know, and they said, I did the same thing for this person, and that person dies. And I don't know the answer to that, John. I don't know the answer.
I think, because I know you know you so well, obviously. Yeah.
Huh, I wonder why that is.
24 years or whatever. You said, if you wrote, did the circle, and I know you don't feel that way, but I think you said, if they all have this together, maybe it gets well. It's nothing that we do if we have our mind, body, and spirit all together.
No, this is just our
philosophy. Say that.
This is just our philosophy. And people, what I said last time is that some of the, not very, and I don't make equal, I think people can be very spiritual and not be particularly religious. I made that point last time. I know some very spiritual people. And whether that tunes them into God's power, or whether we need the intercession of Jesus in healing, the same as we need his intercession for the forgiveness of our sins, I don't know, I'm going to have that all answered for me sometime. I only go by what I know at this point. And I know God wants me to be well. I know God wants me to be whole. I know God wants me to live as good a life. I'm a part of his human creation, and he wants all of his creation to be good like he is good. Goodness, wellness. And sometimes, you know, healing doesn't only take the form of getting rid of a cancer. Sometimes you may still have a cancer. You may not be healed in the, again, biomedical sense of the cancer went away. But you are healed in the sense that you're a new awareness. And you may have to die at 36 years of age because it got to you. Or you may have a respite and die when you're twice that age, you know, 72.
Well,
I don't know about that. We don't know about that. Yeah.
I was reading a book called Health and Prayer, Praying for to Restore Your Health, and he talked about, and he said, if there was one specific formula where everybody could get cured, and he knew it was a surefire thing every time you worked with it, in some ways, to have God give that to us, he said it'd be cursed more than a blessing. He said simply because the earth would have such an abundance of overpopulation that we would all die and start eating one another, you know, or just trying to knock ourselves.
I'd have to read the book, but that's kind of reverse psychology. And there's a lot of people who have said, you know, that God sent the bubonic plague because Europe was becoming overpopulated and millions died, and this sort of thing. Yeah, so, yes, ma'am.
Well, what do you think about the idea of energy, other people concerned about your health, and praying, if you want to call it that, group?
Well,
something more than just.
And this is the difficult thing. Now, there is, because of our human imperfection, a tendency to go to all ends of things. And we make a statement that God is interested in you getting well. God may, because Jesus said he would, cure some people, or his power may be unleashed in your life. And so some may be. On the other end of the thing is the voodoo type of being, how people prostitute grand and noble ideas, grand and noble concept, grand and noble theology and thinking and relationships to God, and they take that and make it into a voodoo type of, I don't know what other term to call it. And I'd say if your congregation on Sunday morning prays for the people that are ill, we made a little joke about this last week, and I said, you know, how do the general prayers in your congregation go? Does the pastor pray for Mrs. Jones, who is in room 223 and needs flowers, you know? Or do you really just say, because God knows what the trouble with those people is, and say, we'd like, dear God, for you to remember the following people who are presently ill, Mary Jones, Sam Jones, and so forth. That, to me, is enough. Then the congregation is together.
You know, we don't have to announce that they had an appendectomy at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and they looked pretty good when I saw them this morning, that type of thing. So I think, yes, concerted prayer of people. Does God only listen if a whole bunch of people pray? I don't know those things. I don't know. All I know is to go on the positive side and say that Jesus taught us by example and by words, and he said that here is a person. He cured some people, 41 miracles, healing miracles Jesus has in the scriptures. And some he did very singly, very quietly, and he even told people, his disciples, now don't go out, because he didn't want to be known as only as the healing guy. He had a message from God to bring. And so he said, don't go out and tell people all about all this stuff. They'll think I'm a magic man. Tell them the whole story. When you preach, tell them the whole story. And some he did privately, and some he did in crowds. So I don't know about those things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just driving. All I'm trying to drive for today, and we're at just about at the end of our session. And I thank you for your intent, your interest, which has been terrific when we wondered whether at the beginning of the session we were even going to do this. But I'm just trying to say to you that, as in all things in your life, healthcare, making us feel good, making us be well, is so important to us all. It affects body, mind, and spirit, that you have to have a theology of healthcare as well as you have a theology of everything else, you know. Mm-hmm. I think there's a kind of a theology of raising your kids, isn't there? Mm-hmm. I maybe they say that's too dramatic. But if you really love those kids,
you could say you have a game plan.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am, you wanted to ask a question or say something, didn't you?
Oh, I just found this interesting that I'm a family patient volunteer at Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, where people come from all over the world for bone marrow transplants. And at that point, they're pretty much exhausted medical care.
Yeah.
It's a last-ditch resort. And in the statistics they gave us, one of the things in the survivals was uniformly a belief in something greater than oneself. Spiritualism.
Yeah.
And now, of course, the flip side of that is many people with a similar belief died. But it was, without exception, the people who survived did have a belief.
Well, I think it's because, in modern day jargon, we'd say they have it all together. You know, another way of saying it is a holistic health care. They have it all together. So it's just, well, I thank you very much for your attentiveness. As I said last night when I talked about ethics, I don't have any final word on everything. The older I get, and I'm a 5-time cancer survivor, and so the older I get, the more I understand that I don't, how little I understand. I just know certain principles, certain things that have been revealed to me, and I pass them on for whatever value it is to you people, and you take it away from here and do what you will with it.